Ready to go.
We're not quite live yet, just a sec. We're loading. Okay, we're good.
Good evening, everyone. I would like to call the August the 9th, 2021 study session of the University City Council to order. Either from the city manager or from members of council, are there any changes to the agenda tonight as presented? Hearing none. Mr. Rose.
Honorable Mayor and council members, we were asked to provide you with a presentation regarding some of the police statistics as well as strategies that are being used in our department. And so tonight we have Chief Hampton here that's going to provide you with the presentation. Chief Hampton.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Rose. Good evening, Honorable Mayor Terry Crow and members of the council and other city officials. Thank you for joining in. I will hit the share my screen to start the presentation. I believe you may have received this from Ms. Reese. In order, if you have any other questions, I'll take those at the end as well and just try to fill in as we go. I'll try to keep this as very brief because I do know this is a study session and in preparation of the city council meeting. Share my screen. Okay, sure. Can everyone see my screen?
Yep.
Can you see the screen, Larry?
Yes, I can
yes.
see
it. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. All right. This is the UCPD strategic update for 2021. Basically what this is putting together, along with the data and the analytics, the statistics, also giving you an understanding of the strategies that we are employing and implementing here within the police department, the 21st century policing strategies. So basically I'll go back to this slide because you never let the fear decide your future. We understand that things occur regionally within the area, within other states, but we use that as a training background to make sure that our officers are sharp with their responses in whatever type of call that embarks them. The UCPD and the University City Police Department, the technology and equipment, this is just somewhat of an overdraft of the equipment and the technology and the tools that we utilize in order to facilitate our job at the most optimum levels. Cameras in the vehicles that we, instead of taking those cameras out and saying, let's just go with the body cameras, we implemented that same company so they can integrate with each other, the body cameras along with the fleet cameras for the cars. Excuse me, 80 plus body worn cameras were purchased and they were deployed in late February, definitely the implementation period of early March. New mobile data terminals, computers for 90% of our vehicles. That's pretty much all of our vehicles that are marked, even several that are unmarked, just somewhat of the detective cars that may not have a mobile data terminal inside them. All supervisors, field trainers, detectives, and others are trained in AR rifles, AR-15 rifles. Now, this gives us the combative firepower that is out on the street as we speak. The Mac 11s, the Mac 10s, the AR-15s. There's several rifles that are in deployment that are out in street hands among street criminals, utilizing those for bad purposes. This gives us the firepower to, when a critical incident is occurring, that we have to utilize that in a strategic manner. it tells you about the rifle vests, all of the vehicles, all of the all of the officers on the street are, all of the officers on the street are deployed with tactical rifle vests. That's besides their normal body armor. Their normal body armor does not stop rifle rounds. And some tragic cases of officers losing their lives, you will hear where these tactical rifle vests would have come in handy. And even the regular body armor just for handguns and semi-automatic weapons are not 100% foolproof. Just last night or the night before, a Chicago police officer lost his life in the line of an ambush. There is one in critical condition as well. So those are still occurring within our everyday areas. Sorry about that. Drones, we've purchased drones within the police department, not just utilizing the ones that the fire department has. We still piggyback and train together, collaborative effort. Right now, there's over six trained drone pilots. There were two more that just received training in January. I plan on having 2 to 4 more throughout the year is out. The training class is very extensive and is very it's only given at certain times of the year. So it's not something that's every other month or what have you. We do have a combative conditions robot that we can deploy in hostage situations. It has video, audio. It's very small in nature. So it's not something that you would see that would stand 4 feet tall, anything like that. It's very small in nature, but it gives us the advantage to keep our personnel safe and upon the hot entries that we have. These are the drones that we took a few pictures of. These are just some of the ones that I think even Councilman Clay got to see some at the National Night Out back to school rally. Some of those drones, these are the, I would say, medium level drones that we have. The larger drones that you get, the battery life, because it gets heavier, they tend to come down a little bit quicker. However, the ones that we utilize for the fire department and for the police department are all preferred law enforcement and public safety style drones. Technology and equipment, new patrol bikes purchased and utilized. Every year we try to purchase at least a couple of new bikes. We just had approximately 5 to 6 police officers doing collaborative training with Washington University and getting them trained and certified for new bike patrolling efforts. That bumps up our efforts up. We're well into the double digits on officers that are duly trained and to have that bike training. That is extensive training. That's a week-long training that we undergo for that. And that equipment, we need to make sure we keep up and match up with that training. The riot mace containers, of course, keep those updated annually. 10 fully combative ready riot control suits. Right now, as is right now, we had a code 1000 enforcement or mutual aid deployment to our request for Ferguson. This is this is on the heels of the anniversary of the Michael Brown incident, and in anticipation, there's slight gatherings that's going on right now, but nothing that is out of control and nothing that is to that level. Let's see, the COVID disinfected devices that we utilize. These are all new devices and technology that we've used for keeping us safe for the COVID variant. I would say approximately 40 to 50% have already been vaccinated, and we're still trying to get over several more hurdles to get those numbers up a little bit more. And and this disinfectant and having it sanitized by ServPro once a week, along with our daily cleanings from the city employees, that is a very helpful tool to keep us safe and healthy. Currently have trained in-house instructors on firearms, tasers, mace, rifles, defensive tactics, crisis intervention, et cetera, on and on and on. Whether that's religious institutions, work issues that we have in keeping those places safe and keeping everyone trained about what, how to react and what to do in the time of crisis. Let's go to the grants awarded to University City Police Department in 2020. Approximately, you're looking at approximately $432,000 worth of grants, grant money, or equipment specifically. And with this, we employ that within to our daily budgeting efforts. So that is a very good program that we intend to keep utilizing and enhancing from year to year to save the city and save our community money on the efforts of public safety. Let's go to calls for service. Calls for service for 2020. As you can see, the total calls at the end is 83,049. You have a breakdown of non-emergency calls, 62, and of course the emergency calls for say. So that's a and this, and I told him just give me a two-year picture on this one. Taking us to the next slide. This is a crime stat comparison from 2016 through 2020. This is showing you a downward trend of crime each year. From 2016 to 2017, there was a 14% decrease. That's in part one crimes for uniform crime statistics reporting. That's UCR reporting. And that has to be reported to the federal government as well as to the state entities as well. From 2017 to 2018, there was an 11% decrease in overall crime. And it gives you a breakdown per the eight categories of where that occurred. 2018 to 2019, there was a 1% decrease. And then lastly, from 2019 to 2020, 20% decrease. Now, I would hear in some rounds where you would say, oh, that's due to COVID. Now, criminals don't confine to COVID. I mean, they love the fact that more availability and more time for them not to be at a job, not to be dealing with social programs, to have the opportunity. So just the opportunity of the committing a crime, we were able to decrease that and keep those numbers down. This year is a new year where we have to deploy new tactics dealing with new criminal statistic reporting. And I want to make sure I reiterate that, and I'll go over that in a slide coming up soon as well. This is the third ward. This is from 2016 through 2020. I had this on here because I recently had a presentation with the third ward council members and other community members and sharing the crime statistics. So I just kind of embedded that into here. We're not seeing a largely trending up effort or problem in the third ward. So that's not the issue. In the third ward, reference crime statistics and crime in general. Weapons seized by University City Police Department. As you can see, weapons are on the increase. Now, the seizing of those weapons, and even though the state law is very relaxed in when an individual can possess and carry a weapon, is still criminal to carry it in certain natures, whether you have a felony and a violent felony, whether you have drugs, whether you're impaired with alcohol, whether you're impaired with drugs themselves, and flourishing and committing them in the commission of a crime. So a lot of weapons will get seized, and this is a breakdown of those weapons that we have from 2019 through 2020. NIBRS. Now we're speaking upon NIBRS. This is the new system effective January 1st of 2021. This is what the federal government required us to transition our national incident-based reporting system, NIBRS, for Missouri. They also call it MIBRS, mirroring off the federal level. And they call it that because we have to report our statistics to the state of Missouri first, and then it's reported to the federal government. Once accepted by the state, then it will be accepted by the federal government at that point. So you can see the difference on the left, all the way to the right of this slide. On the left of that, it says summary base. Those eight violent crimes, those eight most serious crimes in the UCR reporting mechanisms have now been updated to over 24 offense categories. Give me an example of some of the categories that you're seeing reported, which will show it somewhat of an increase in certain things. Drug paraphernalia, a very victimless crime, as you say, a person that you capture with drug paraphernalia, that particular status offense is now being recorded. A shoplifting of a candy bar, something as simple as that, that does not meet, of course, a felony level or anything close to a felony level, that will get reported. Intricate things. Like they say, domestic violence situations where I push my sister in the household, but no one's injured, no harm, no foul. It was broken up by a parent. If we took a police report, that gets reported. So that gets reported into a simple assault category that you sometimes see on those monthly reports that's being submitted. So like I said, taking the most 8 serious crime summary base to the 24 incident base crimes reported in general, and the other thing that causes an increase on that is prior to 2021, you only had to report the most serious crime of an incident, meaning that if I commit several crimes of that, and I want to say several, like 2 crimes of an incident, if I rob and I assault in a certain fashion, then it's just a robbery along with that assault being encompassed into that robbery statistic. However, in incident base, you can possibly have 5 reportable incidents for 1 specific crime. If I commit 1 criminal act, it's a possibility that we would hit that incident base, depending on the categories, for 5 different reportable offenses at that particular time. Which is troubling to a lot of chiefs and a lot of communities in general, because it gives the impression as if crime has increased, when really you're talking about 1 particular incident that marked the book 5 times. First half of 2021, UCPD NIBRS crime statistics. This gives you a pie chart of everything, and the next chart will break down some of this pie chart in general. So as you can see, larceny by far still the largest of the regional trends that we have to deal with. And that's something as simple as someone stealing a air freshener or a phone charger out of someone's unlocked car that could fall into that category. Okay, first half of UCPD 2021 NIBRS crime statistics, it breaks down what you specifically saw on that pie chart, and it gives you that grand total of 955. Now, it's hard to contrast where you stand the previous year, because these reports did not have to be reported the previous year. So this is going to be a work in progress towards the end of our annual year to see how we can get a comparative model to show you what 2021 compared to 2020 or to 2019 or so and so. So we're still working on that. And I would come back to any of these if we have questions on this as well. UCPD strategic methods to addressing crime, the 6 pillars enforced within the 21st century policing. We embody this. We don't have to be told by Department of Justice entity or any groups or organizations to come in doing a consent decree. We've already got these embodied within our 250 plus general order policies and our daily implementations of how we do this, whether that's the building the trust with the professionalism, the standards, the community outreach, the engagement, the juvenile diversion programs. I want to say the juvenile diversion program for the ages 9 through 17 started again in June the 1st. It started on June the 1st, I believe that was June the 1st or July the 1st. However, we're still working out kinks with that, but we're just diverting first-time status offense issues for juveniles with our family court. We're the first department, we're the first community to embark on that other juvenile diversion program. We already had one in place with the JCC, and as I spoke previously before, but now this encompasses goes to a younger age, and it gives a chance for that juvenile not to get lost in a system and to get corrective help, not only for that juvenile, that wayward juvenile, but also his family that may need the needed resources. Policy and oversight. You see all the different mechanisms for the policy and the oversight that comes with that. We, in order to continuously receive grants of that 432,000 nature that you saw, we have to comply and check all the boxes for everything from training to the statistical data to show that we're doing what is required for us to meet those levels. Post for the state, national accreditation, or even just the federal bodies themselves. Technology and social media, the body cameras, the drones, the surveillance, the next door apps. We're partners with all of them. We're partners with everybody. We're partners as much as they allow us to be on the social media aspect level. And we intend to keep embarking on as much partnership as we can to help us keep this community safe as possible. Community policing and crime reduction, that's the situational awareness and the community engagement, along with the forums that we hold. We, even through COVID, we've still been hosting a plethora of focus group meetings and other facility meetings that we have. I recently gave the directive that we're going to be doing, if so be it that the COVID restraints continue as we see it trending up, we're going to have a virtual Citizens Police Academy this year. This will be the first of our nature to come through with a virtual Citizens Police Academy. I've approved the verbiage for that to go out, and that should be disseminated, and that will take place sometime in October and November. But that will be a definite plus in this community. And now if we can have in person, we would love to have them here and in our roll call room and go over every aspect of policing for 21st century. The officer training and education, the post requirements, the accreditation requirements, and all the minimum educational requirements. Now, all of such within these six pillars that I've covered that you see here on the screen. The strategic methods to address the crime. Now, we utilize two employee evaluations to make sure that all of our personnel, two per year. So it's a biannual employee evaluation module that we've had since I first got employed here. And I can tell you that it works. It's merit-based. Not every step increase is an automatic increase. You have to work for your merit. You have to work to keep the community safe. And that's just a mechanism because we also want buy-in. We want the collaboration of the employee and the community and the accountability amongst that comes with that. So we address the crime trends on a daily, weekly, and routine basis, not just seasonal. The UCPD daily patrol plans are actual strategic plans. So there's not just the officers who come on duty and you're giving a key and you're told, this is the car you have today. No, you're giving specific directions as to what's occurring in your assigned area. And you can also listen and hear what is occurring in your neighboring assigned areas. So these strategic plans are methods for us to combat trending issues, whether that's catalytic converters, thefts, or whether it's part vagrants, shots fired in specific times and areas, even on our border, even in another jurisdiction. We will collaborate with those jurisdictions and make sure that we're not just responding, but that we have a proactive nature in that particular area. Roll calls and daily training sessions, like I mentioned, the COVID brought about the schedules and change. It brought about schedules being changed and relationships being strained, but we persevered with our mission. This profession is steady losing employees at an alarming rate. That's not just it's not just in other departments. It's all every thing about law enforcement in general. People are getting out, they're cashing in the checks. They say, I can go into a private sector, whether that's security or whether that's other businesses, whether that's other professions. But we're trying to make sure that we have the buy-in from the ones that want to stay, the millennials. We have new Gen Zers coming on board. They'll be 21 this year. We hire 21-year-olds, 21 and up. They go through extensive training, just like any other employee, and we want to make sure we're steady moving forward on that. Strategic methods to address crime. The Anti-Crime Initiative Program allows us to improve the methods of preventing crime, the fear of crime, increase police visibility, and continue to develop a cohesive partnership with our community. The reason for the computers and the cars is not just to have all of this technology, just to say, okay, we have this. And it looks good, it's pretty, it's a pretty look. It's very good optics. No, it's to keep our officers deployed in a neighboring area, in a strategic method. The same way that you can come to the station and write a police report on a desktop computer, you can also park at a neighboring business, be seen on a major street, be seen in a neighborhood area while you're typing a police report, or you're typing a document, whether that's a memorandum or anything of such. Those are methods to utilize the technology as a tool and to bring it to our community for its best practice purposes. As you can see, the SEPTED of the crime prevention through environmental design, we're very in depth and in tune in that. Have several instructors trained in the SEPTED model. Have the Anti-Crime Initiative. We bring all of that within our community and our stakeholders. We meet with our stakeholders quite a bit. We have the University City being a very eclectic community, very close knit community. We get quite a bit of help from business owners to religious leaders to just vocal neighboring people in our community. So we appreciate all of that and more. So training. As an organization, our goal is to continue to provide excellent service to our University City community in the most effective manner possible. As you can see, the updates, the policy, the training, the supervision of that, the corrective action of anything that deviates from those policies and that training and that supervision, the trends and patterns and the updates. We make sure that all of our supervisors, even our training officers, are very in tune with this module of training for the department. And we try to enhance that on every employee basis. Now going quickly into the crime diversion programs, the juvenile detention alternatives, the JDAI is the program that I was speaking of, referenced the ages 9 through 17. And that 17 got upgraded because it used to be 16, until depending on the state law. But in St. Louis County, they do practice the age of 17 still being a juvenile. So we practice that here at University City Police Department. And some other, and take for instance, St. Charles, they do not. Now, in St. Charles County, they do not practice a juvenile being 17. They still recognize them as being 16 and under. But we have the diversion programs in place that you can see right here. This is the other diversion program that we have several members of the community, whether that's Chaplain Alverta Smith for the police department, or whether those are Deputy Juvenile Justice Officer Mary Morales. They come and they hear cases and they try to distribute resources out to that family at the most at the best practice that they can. Future UCPD community outreach events. You can see National Night Out just ended. Coming up is Beyond the Badge Teen Talk. I was spearheading that myself. That is through NOBLE, National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives. I will be on hand. This will be the second one, and it will be at University City High School again. This is a pilot program created by a member of NOBLE, a federal probation parole officer employee that spearheaded this, and we collaborated, and basically we talked, we let the kids ask any questions that they want amongst personnel that show up and in uniform to be receptive to what they're looking for and what they need in that particular time. The active intruder training scenarios, we're working with the fire department. We actually had training today. We're having training in some of those condemned buildings that have not been demolished yet, but they are on the list to be demolished, and it's very helpful to train in a collaborative effort with our public safety brothers and sisters. Active shooter training religious institutions, that is something that we provide to all religious institutions here in our community. This is something that we've got trainers in-house trained up from the state patrol. This is a module that they created that we learned, and we put train the trainer in practice, and we're sending that out to the synagogues, to the Baptist churches, to the Lutheran churches, to the non-denominational churches as such. As you can see, the UCPD Citizens Police Academy in October, the UCPD hiring event in October, candy and snacks, that's pretty much around the Halloween timeframe, food giveaways around the Thanksgiving timeframe, and the holiday gift giveaway is around the Christmas timeframe. So just several community outreach programs that we have coming forward. Good communication is the bridge between confusion and clarity. We try to have effective communication for all of our community partners, our stakeholders, our city officials, and anyone that's just inquisitive as to what we're doing. We're showing that we're embodying the 21st century policing method and here in University City, and we're very open to listen and to take and gather information and see if that's helpful for our best practices. I'm at the question section. I can unshare my screen. Oh my goodness. How did I do that? Okay. Sorry.
Chief, thank you very much for your presentation. I'm assuming that some of my colleagues probably have questions for you. I know that I do, but I would like to begin if any of my colleagues would like to begin with questions, or Mr. Rose, do you have any questions or comments you want to make before members of council jump in?
Honorable Mayor, the only thing I would ask is for Chief to just elaborate a bit more on the level of staffing that we currently have in the police department.
All right. The level of staffing, like I say, we're just last week we received 3 resignations. I'll give you that up front. One is going to a federal agency, one is going to St. Charles, and one is getting out of police work. So it's a very fluid situation. These are not employees that we embodied that we thought we would lose, but yes, we have. Whether that's and one is going to be a federal, like say, postal inspector, one is going to be an officer out into a community that she was born and raised in, apparently in St. Charles County, and the other is getting out of police work because his son basically told him that he never sees him. So we have a very family-friendly schedule. These officers work 12-hour shifts, and that's pretty much weekend on, weekend off. So basically, this is the most challenging in police work that it can be during this time frame, because it's COVID restrictions is not just hitting the layperson, but it does affect the law enforcement community quite a bit. Now, I can tell you we're approximately 9 officers down. Now, those 9 officers down, that 9 personnel down, let me say that, that embodies whether that's a detective or 2, whether that embodies a couple of supervisors. So you're not looking at entry level personnel being that depleted. That's not the case here. Approximately 9 officers. We have, as Mr. Rose knows, we have 2 officers that are due to be sworn in on August the 20th that are coming from the Eastern Missouri Police Academy. We have a 3rd officer that will be sworn in a week or 2 after that from that same policing academy. We have 2 recruits currently in the St. Louis County Police Academy. We lost a 3rd recruit in week 2 of that police academy. That's how challenging these efforts are. That's how challenging the training is for becoming a police officer in the 21st century. This is not something that It's not like they're going to a boot camp for a military, but this is a paramilitary organization, and they want to test your stress level and the entry level to see what is it you are able to handle, what is it you can come with. We prep all of our personnel as best we can. Right now, the only police academy that we still sponsor employees at is the St. Louis County Police Academy. The Eastern Missouri Police Academy, we get recruits from time to time that we can kind of steal away from other organizations. And I can tell you right now, we're still embodying an employment agreement with these entry level officers to make sure that we're getting a minimum return out of this personnel.
Thank you. I just wanted to add that there's been some discussion nationally about the potential of lowering the standards to make the recruitment process easier. I would not, as well as Chief Hampton, make that recommendation to you. You must remember that the individuals that we employ have the ability to take someone's life. So we want to make sure that we have the best trained, the best equipped people that we can afford. So with that, I will turn things back over to Mayor.
Who has the first set of questions? Mr. Smotherson.
Thank you, Mayor Crow. Chief Hampton, I just wanted to ask a quick question. Well, I've got a few questions, but a lot of the companies out there, and I know you've seen this, are offering bonuses. And I agree with City Manager Rose in that I'm not interested in lowering the standards. And I'm happy to hear that you're not doing that either. But I'd like to find out, are we offering some kind of bonus? What's our recruitment plan? And also, what is our retention plan? I mean, if you can mention that.
Well, I can say that I meet with the City Manager Rose on a monthly basis. And in my next monthly meeting, I was going to just try to tweak his interest level of possibly doing something very similar as far as a bonus to come in. However, we're still requiring on the retention level a four-year requirement now. We've upped that from a three-year requirement. The three-year, basically, you're spending your first year in training specifically, whether that's 7 months in a police academy or whether that's another 5 months on the street here in the department. So when they say that officers are getting less training, That's not the truth. St. Louis Police Academy is a Class A level police academy, and they're required to have 993 hours worth of training to facilitate their graduation. Eastern Missouri Police Academy is very similar. They're up in the high 800 marks of their training level. What I can tell you, for instance, Eastern Missouri Police Academy, they're coming out crisis intervention trained already. St. Louis Police Academy, because they have so many numbers already, high numbers of training hours that they have, we have to send them back for a certification for 40 hours worth of training more. They don't want to add the 40 hours onto the 993. Now, the retention level, and as far as the incentive, that is made practice in certain communities. It works. Sometimes it doesn't work. Just very minimum level, minimum amount may entice more people to come, but we don't check every personnel that's looking for a law enforcement job is not University City right. And that's something that they find out through a process at the front door, at the gate, because they understand this is a community-based police department. So just coming to get an incentive and to get the pay and to leave, that's not going to work because we are holding those people to those employment agreements, and if they're costing us equipment, training, it's still something that needs to be reimbursed. However, that still it does not keep the viable person in a position. Now, I can tell you some of these personnel that have left, that is something, those are some tough shoes to fill in some aspect, but in some that have left, then it's very easy to fill that position.
Okay, thank you, sir. And I'm just gonna ask one more question and let somebody else get a shot at this. And that is, if you could tell us, and because one of the things is who's on duty, who's off duty, in reference to COVID-19, what's the process of trying to get more officers vaccinated? Because that can affect who's on duty and who's not and our numbers.
Well, the process is pure education and pure understanding to get them to be educated and understand where the first line of defense, we're out on the ground level at all costs. Within this police building, anyone can come in and not tell us that they have they're tested positive for COVID. Understanding that we are asking them to wear masks. We are wearing masks ourselves. We are following all protocols, CDC guidelines, as well as the chief's associations that are recommending. And these officers are doing that. I have actually put out a request to my commanders, my bureau commanders, to give me an updated record of our levels. I would like to believe that we're closer to 60% and 70% now, because I think officers who have experienced this pandemic situation have learned, and they understand that it's more of a necessity for our profession. This is not something that this profession went into mandating that every person do. So you have to understand, and there's cases of people who have been vaccinated. And we actually had a couple cases like that here. We actually had at least two members that I know that were vaccinated, and they still ended up with the COVID protocols that they had to go under.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Who is next? Anyone? Mr. Cusick.
Thank you, Mayor Crow. Thank you, Chief, for the presentation. I have, I guess, three or four questions or just asking for elaboration, but they're very short. Congratulations on getting the $432,000 worth of grants. Do you anticipate that that will continue or will increase?
I anticipate that it will be a upward trend, but I can tell you of that $432,000 worth of grant, a large sum of that comes from the COPS grant. That COPS grant is the hiring of personnel. That is to relieve the city of financial requirement in certain aspects of the COPS hiring grant. So that is a decent amount of that $432,000 worth of grant just for that year. Now on the levels that are very minimal when it comes to the amounts that are out there, the state grants are something that we do. They're called mini grants. You can see some of them being in the hundreds of dollars as opposed to being thousands of dollars here and there. So the most that we're seeing now from the state is coming up to about $6,000 or $2,500. So it's not to the point, to the level of the federal funding. Thus is why it pays to be collaborate with the federal government in efforts of complying with their mandates at certain levels, i.e. like NIBRS, the crime statistics. Not every police department in every community signed on to NIBRS. However, they won't be eligible for those federal funds.
Understood, thank you for that. And then how are our canine officers doing?
Okay, I can tell you our canine officers are doing well for the most part. One of the resignees from last week was a canine officer. That was the explosive bomb dog, Officer Franklin. That's the one that's getting out of police work, unfortunately. But that is something that, like I said, we just literally his last day was Thursday or Friday. So it's this very fluid situation. They're feeling the strain just like all the other officers. The canines are fine. The canines are very good and well maintained and very well cared for. And the training level for those canine officers are optimal because they have to go to training at least every other week for the handler aspect and their certification purposes.
Good, thank you. And finally, I'll just cut it to three questions. Yesterday and previously, I've had conversations with residents about people going up and down the street checking cars to see if they're locked. And some people are still believing that if you don't lock your car, people won't want to get into them and they won't break your windows. However, I think that in the past, your department has explained that lock your cars because the majority of the crimes that are being committed on vehicles like that, people are not going to be breaking windows.
That is correct. The trending efforts that we're seeing and the data that we analyze to show that shows that you have a very successful chance of not being a victim, not being a soft target. If you create that soft target, you're not only creating a soft target for you, for them to come back to your car, but to your neighborhood and to the surrounding neighborhood around you. So we ask for us to work in a collaborative effort. We also ask that we don't have anyone confronting any suspects, any perpetrators. Call it in. Let us be the personnel that confront those perpetrators. Because we're talking late at night. We're talking early morning hours of the night, and we want to make sure that we take a safety protocol to that approach.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Other questions, Mr. Hales.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Chief. Two quick questions on the weapons confiscated. One of the categories was rifles. I was wondering if you could clarify, is there a distinction between what type of rifle, you know, like an old 22 versus assault rifle? And I'll ask the second one also, is there a pattern within, and I've read all about the challenges with policing right now and keeping people in the profession, but is there kind of a profile of folks that are leaving? Is it within the first 6 years that kind of, and that's, I don't expect you to have that data. I'm just kind of curious if there might be a pattern in terms of the timeline.
Yes, the first question, the rifles, there's no particular rifle trend that we're seeing. Whatever rifles that they can steal, they will take it, because most of these rifles are stolen that are being used on the that are being used out in the street and the public. And whether those are burglaries or whether those are from cars or in the trunks of cars or back seat of a car, for say. So there's not. Yeah. And it can be an old 22 rifle or upwards level of an AK-47, an AR-15. Those are still rifles that we are seeing that we have to combat with and deal with. Now, as far as the trend is 3 to 5 years of employees on average being in law enforcement and getting out of the profession. Thus is why we initially had the minimum requirements of 3 years, but 3 to 5 years, and in the trending group that we're seeing the most in that group is being the millennials. For say, now we can say that the millennials drives up those numbers, but you have a lot of non-millennials, prior generation, that are getting out of police work itself. They're taking early retirements. We lost just, and I think Mr. Rose knows this, we've lost a couple with early retirements. They took a 20 and out instead of a 25-year requirement for a maximum type of return for their pension. So they decided to take it less 5 years and less money. And you're talking about a percentage of almost 20 to 25% for the rest of their life to make that decision. So that gives you somewhat of the serious decision making that they're making.
Anyone else? I think Stacy was next, and then we'll go to Alita. Mr. Clay.
Yes, thank you, Mayor Crow. A couple quick things. The ShotSpotter program and equipment, and I know it's not ShotSpotter, it's like Band-Aid or Kleenex. That's the name of one brand that gets used for everybody. Right. So I want to be, I know that, but whatever we call it, how is it doing? Is it having the kind of results we want to see?
Oh, it's having results. It's just another tool on our belt that gets us to an area, a specific area. May not pinpoint exactly where the crime occurred, but it gives us an understanding that, okay, if this was not in our jurisdiction, like I said, we only have a small section of our community that has that technology. And we utilize the analytics and the data to predict where to utilize those funds in the most advantageous way of capturing that best practice of their use. And I can tell you, it's been successful. It's been helpful, but it is just a tool in that aspect.
Okay, and I understand we may be getting some more reports, actual reporting on that. So I do look forward to that. City Manager Rose and Chief Hampton. A couple other quick things. The calls you have listed, the number of calls, mm-hmm. these are not necessarily associated with part one crimes. These are just calls for any service, a level of service, correct?
That's correct. That's
okay, correct. I know that's, there's been some back and forth about that. Thank you. And the final thing is, you talked about training. Can you say a little bit about what officers are going through in terms of diversity training, or when they're encountering circumstances that aren't what we typically think of as criminal, but folks who may have mental health issues or other things where we don't want policing in necessarily the traditional sense, but we want a different approach. Can you talk about training as it relates to that?
Well, diversity training and bias training are mandated. Those are mandated by the state, mandated by the federal government. But we take it even further than that. We have that training on an annual basis. We have not just an hour or two. You're having full dedication to making sure that we receive that training, that sensitivity training, that training that is needed to keep everyone safe in a manner. Treating everyone as if you would want to be treated that way. Okay, so that whatever training that you want to call it, desensitization, racial inequities, whatever the case is got a bunch of different names, but the point is that's calculated through the state mandates as well. Now, as far as the you asked about the training for CIT, crisis intervention training. Even the ones that are coming out of the police academy that are not certified that we have to send back for the certification, they are receiving a minimum of 24 hours of that. To get certified for the crisis intervention training, you have to have 40 hours of training. So that is that is the difference of that. So on top of the 24 hours that they're receiving and while in the police academy, they will come back out and receive another 40 hours. And then that is an annual requirement to re-up the amount of training each year for the crisis intervention. That helps us deal with mental health consumers, and that helps us deal with crisis incidents within our community.
Chief, I believe that you also have the officers trained in de-escalation.
That's correct. That is accurate in the de-escalation skills. And that comes through with some of that crisis intervention training, as well as other classes that we send. We have the mechanisms to have virtual training, as well as we're a member department of St. Louis County Police and Municipality Police Academy. So that is a helpful tool for us to get as much training as needed as possible. So we're in two different entities to where we can receive as much training on the specialties that we need.
Ms. Klein.
Councilmember Clay actually asked two of the questions that I had. I just want to extend on the shot detection technology a little bit and ask if there's been any progress in working with other communities in that regard?
Other communities are not investing in the technology that we're investing here in University City because we're not in that aspect. We do collaborate and we do have collaborative efforts of intel sharing meetings and an understanding. But specifically where this technology is, those communities, I would say, probably won't put those funds together for those particular for that particular area, for that particular technology. So that is just to be mindful of that aspect of it.
Okay, thank you.
Well, if no one else, Mr. McMahon, you are muted.
One question for the chief. Sure. Looking at your crime statistics comparisons, and I'm happy to see there's an overall decrease from 2016 to 2020. But looking at 2020 specifically, it looks like that the four top categories are crimes against persons, and they have significant increases. Right. And then the crimes against property, mm-hmm. which would be burglary and larceny, had and motor vehicle theft had good decreases that give us that overall. What's the plan for trying to combat the crimes against persons, which some folks could argue the more serious crimes as compared to, let's say, larceny, as you described, could be as simple as taking a air freshener out of a car. You know, we've got quality versus quantity. How are we going to really impact the serious nature of the crimes against people?
Well, I can tell you the crimes against persons numbers that you're looking at. These are incidents that tallied multiple victims. So that is not something where you had just multiple incidents to say that six different incidents for say for the homicide. That's not, I can't speak of approximately how many incidents those were, but we take that very serious when we look at the deployment efforts and the strategic efforts in deploying and keeping the community safe, and understanding that yes, it those are more serious crimes. And this is like you say, this is one reason we were all for keeping the crime statistical reporting data the same. However, with the requirements, it throws off those efforts for saying, okay, let's focus more on the more serious crimes of homicide, rape, and robbery. We still do, and we still do for our community, and we educate our community partners. I can tell you that that increase of once this year or whatever the case is, that currently for the current year, we're not seeing those same numbers in the same marking areas for that particular crime statistic. So that is something that we do monitor and we do have discussions on, and we try to make sure we have a very tailored approach to reducing those numbers.
And just to follow up, I wanted to just, you know, part of those statistics don't talk about the other things. There aren't statistics in there about apprehensions, but I know the community was very happy with your police work with other police forces in apprehending the individuals with the incidents that happened at the restaurant and here in University City. That was so unfortunate, but the great police work that was done to apprehend those individuals when they left the state. And we really appreciate that. That's not reflected necessarily, but in these statistics, but good job. And we know we appreciate your work.
Thank you, sir.
Seeing that there are no other questions, I would like to follow up with Mr. McMahon's comments and say, Chief, thank you very much for the hard work that you and our officers put in and day out. You respond to an awful lot of calls for an awful lot of different things. And sometimes you got to be calm and peaceful. Sometimes you have probably a rather aggressive situation on your hands. So please know we respect all that you folks do, and we're glad to have you keeping us safe. We're also pleased that we have a police force that recognizes and honors CIT training and de-escalation and diversity. So all things that were made clear during our meeting with our Congresswoman Bush, who was very pleased to see the different aspects that we take in our training. So with that, Chief, thank you. And we have just a couple of minutes. So what I thought we'd do is take about a 5-minute break, and we will adjourn the study session and start back up in 5 minutes for the regular session. And to the best of my knowledge, unless the city manager has changed his mind, we do not intend on having an executive session after the regular meeting.
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Meeting adjourned.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Chief.